Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You're listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. We have Brian Lingus on the show. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you for having me back on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, of course. I want to get your take on the, you know, I just did a podcast on Saturday afternoon on the Berkshire Hathaway letter, but wanted to bring you on as a business analyst and a good investor.
Thank you.
To give us your take on, you know, the letter, the interview that was, later done on CNBC just yesterday. So, what was your overall take?
This is a classic Warren Buffett. There are things that never change. And the letter, the interview, contains what you would expect. More of the same. There's no surprises. Warren Buffett, you know, he's known as the internal optimist. Always bet on America. Just the typical stuff. Buying stocks is better than gold. Stocks are better than bonds. He expects to make money off stocks over time. The letter, you know, there's your occasional Buffett grandpa jokes. He doesn't, every time he has an opportunity to remind us that he's younger than Charlie Munger, he does. He takes a couple shots at Wall Street. He has a great comment on not avoiding debt, but how to be, you know, be careful on how to use debt. I like that part. He always talks about, he brings up some manager by names and then complains about high valuation, talks about investment fees, you know, buying the index is the best way to invest in stocks. And, so my take on it is that, you know, there's no surprises here. Anything investment related, over the last 50, 55, 60 years plus that he's been doing this has been said.
Was there anything that stuck out to you?
Well, it's the occasional stuff. What stuck out to me is it's a less of what he didn't include. And it's a recurring theme every year. I think the part that if you're new to investing or you're not a professional or you simply want to learn more, you turn to this guy. You turn to his letter, right? And
I personally thought it was one of the least interesting letters he's ever written, personally.
Well, yeah, there's no...
There was nothing that was like, whoa.
Do you think that's because you're a professional investor or... because you're looking for higher, deeper insights, right? Like how the insurance businesses are doing, how the insurance company are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the letter was just so short, you know, compared to most of them.
Yeah,
I think part of it is that I'm a professional investor, but the other part of it too is that, you know, perhaps there wasn't much to talk about this year either. I mean, he hasn't really made a big acquisition since Precision
right.
Castparts.
Yep.
I think it would have been nice, personally, for him to go a little bit deeper into the businesses. But on the other hand, he's also doing something which I've been saying for years now, which is that people get way too into the weeds on each individual subsidiary, and it ends up not really mattering. Not that it doesn't matter, but that overall it's not like you're going to get some significant edge because you're analyzing every little aspect of each individual sub. And he used to go more into detail on the different subsidiaries, and he's stepping back from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this letter will be known for what he didn't say. He talked about the forest and the trees, you know, don't focus on the trees, focus on the forest. I, as an investor in the company, I wish he'd talk because he dropped a nugget. He talked about the sick trees, the disease trees,
yep.
And that some of these companies will not be around in 10 years, but he leaves it to that. He's not going to say, oh, company X needs to step it up.
But he explained why he didn't do that in the interview.
Yeah, then he'll probably turn to 3G to do the work.
Well, no, no, but, he didn't. I mean, you don't have people working for you and saying, "Hey, your business won't be around in 10 years."
That's no, crazy. I know. I'm just joking on that one. But yeah.
No, I mean, I don't look. I mean, if you read the subsidiary list, you could probably guess a few of them.
Yeah. No, for sure. It's. Yeah, I mean, yeah. He said, "Look, focus on the big horse here. You know, the railroad, the energy company, and then a couple of big insurance companies. These two blocks, what he calls them groves, are 60%, 2/3 of the pre-tax profits.
Yeah,
you know, that's your business. Don't worry about, you know, the carpet company. Don't worry about the frame company.
I think it speaks to a larger issue too. You know, there's a lot of people who in the value investing community, they say how much they love Buffett, but then if you actually look at what they do, they're not doing things that necessarily are that smart. And one of the things that I see, right, Charlie Munger has actually called this out, where he talks about how just because you've spent a lot of time on an idea doesn't mean that it somehow makes the idea better.
Correct.
And Buffett talks about how, you know, if you start analyzing, you know, every single little detail of the business, it not necessarily going to give you an edge. And if anything, could just be a lot of waste of mental time. And when he says, yeah, I made a decision to buy so-and-so in 5 minutes, I think a lot of people hear that, but they don't really believe it. Right? And the truth is that Buffett sometimes will make a decision in 5 minutes after doing, you know, years of reading about something. And I've found in my personal anecdotal experience that there's a lot of people in the investment world who, right, they're analytical by nature, wired more to be an engineer, and there's a linear there's a linear kind of thinking that takes place with that, right? So, you know, if it can't be measured, it doesn't exist kind of thinking, which of course is insanely stupid. But you have, you know, people, they want to just understand the balance sheet and the income statement, the cash flow statement, and that's all great. But when it comes to some of the more intangible, big picture stuff, if you can't totally measure it, sometimes people aren't interested. And it's always really interesting to me that, you know, and I've talked to some people, you know, for instance, Tom Gaynor. One of the things I really love and respect about him is that
the Merkel guy?
Yeah. He really, really gets the idea of looking at things from a big picture point of view. He gets big ideas. It's funny. If I run something by Tom Gaynor, he will get it instantly. Where, you know, like a lot of other value investors, they won't get it because they need to like analyze and understand it and see all the measurements and data. And it's like you've missed the point, right? If I was to say, hey, you know, if you use this product, you'll feel a little happier and have better relationships with your family. Well, now people value happiness and people value better relationships with your family, but you can't really measure that necessarily, right? So people would say, well, that product's then stupid because I can't see it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally. You can't you can't put a number on everything.
No, not at all.
You can't measure everything.
And that's also why I look at, say, the investments at Markel and Tom Gaynor, and I'm a Markel shareholder for full disclosure, but I love the culture there. I love the management, you know, whether it's Tom Gaynor or Steve. Those guys are really the real deal, and I just, you know, big shout out to those guys over there. But then there's some other companies who follow similar operating models on the surface. But then when you listen to them speak, it's like, wow, you don't really get it. So I've always thought that's interesting. And I think that when it comes to Buffett talking about not you know, getting too hyper-obsessed about every little nitty-gritty detail, you know, he talks about that, yes, I'm going to be writing to my sisters, right? He talks about in the interview, yeah, I write to my sisters. But I think in this case, he's also writing to the value community. Just because these guys are so over analytical. You know, I have a big interest in personal development, and I will tell you that for a group of value investors who pride themselves on being so rational and so intelligent and smart, One of the dumbest things that you can do is start learning a lot of wisdom-based ideas through reading about books. It's like you think you're gonna learn this from a book and intellectualizing it. You've really missed the point. And that's a perfect example of how linear thinking in some ways can cloud someone's judgment.
Well, you don't how to drive by reading a book, you know.
You don't have you
don't learn how to drive by reading a book.
Right. And you don't learn how to work out by reading a book. And you don't learn how to play tennis by reading a book. You know, I was very funny. It's like someone I've had people before, you know, because people know that I've done a lot of coaching and personal development work. And occasionally I'll have someone, talk to me and they'll say something to me thinking that, like, I'll think it's really cool. And they'll be like, you know, I've been reading a lot about enlightenment. Okay, cool. That's great. Glad you're reading about it.
Well, yeah. How do you apply it? Do you take it to the next level? Do you see the big picture with this? What's the vision? What's the objective? What's the plan?
It's bullshit. It's like it's like if you're a bicycle rider and trying to read about how to balance on a bike. You could read about that for 10 years and it won't give you any access to balance.
Right. Well, there are experiences, right? Like you need.
Right.
Expose yourself to it. No, I totally get what you mean. There's a mean by reading about war, you know what war is.
There's a company that I'm a shareholder in, and one of the aspects to the research that I did in this case, this is the exception, not the rule, was I actually drove around with one of the employees of the company for a day and started actually seeing how they interact with their customers. And there was the only way to understand their model was to experience it. And there was this whole debate going on in Seeking Alpha on whether their business is scammy, whether it's good. And I just decided to actually see it for myself, and I was blown away and made these people writing these articles very – it was very obvious that they've never actually seen the business in action.
Yeah. Seeking Alpha is an interesting place. You have to I occasionally write on it and I read articles.
Likewise.
I think you have to look at the credibility of the reader – and
when I say Seeking Alpha, I just mean financial journalism in general, right? It's very clear sometimes when a writer has never actually been around the business or experienced the business.
Well, the industry itself needs, I mean, just the you know, we got sidetracked here, but just the industry of media in general is having big problems. You know, they need the click, they need the eyeballs, they need the advertisement money. But how do you get it? You know, how do you drive traffic? And very often, you just have to do some flashy headlines, something juicy.
Yeah. And it's short-term thinking. If journalists up their standard with what they wrote about, you know, the long game would be you would actually drive more traffic as people trust you more. So a lot of the articles that are disingenuous, they'll know it'll attract clicks, which is great short term profits, but you know, long term they'll actually do it at the expense of their reputation. So it's okay.
Yeah.
The market has a way of working itself out like that.
Yeah, well, Berkshire Hathaway is a big newspaper guy.
That's true.
They own a lot of regional papers. Not sure how they're doing, but it's
all in decline.
Yeah. The Berkshire Hathaway. I see, I guess, three possible paths forward for Buffett and Company.
Okay.
I guess the one that they probably won't do is return cash. Maybe accept that Berkshire Hathaway has to be less ambitious in its future. I don't think they can grow book value at double-digit rates or market share price at double-digit. Now to use that now, at double-digit price next decade, like they used to in the last, you know, 50 years. Maybe they'll repurchase more shares. You know, I don't think they'll do a dividend. The next options is there's this is what this is pref is number one thing right now for Buffett is buying another company. That's what he's trying to do. And he mentioned in a letter and in an interview, and it's not the first time that he mentioned it, is that the companies are too expensive. Good, decent companies are very expensive. And in a sense, Buffett is a victim of his own success because he calls somebody, they know he has money. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like Berkshire Hathaway calls to buy you out. You're like, okay, you know, it's not going to be. And the third thing is buying more stocks. So wait for a crash or correction and load up. But yeah, they're really, really big. And what I find funny is that I think, you know, for as long as I've been following this company and reading about Buffett, they always mention, oh, you know, can't beat the market and we're too big. Oh, you know, don't bet on us on beating the market. And years after year, or almost every year, they do it. They still beat the S&P, even though they keep saying, yeah, we're too big, you know, just by the index. They still do it. So that's you know, that's in a sense pretty amazing. And I think they're sixth or seventh largest publicly traded company right now. And the rest of them are just tech, you know, the Apple, the Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, these companies. And there's Berkshire Hathaway, which is, you know, insurance / industrial company. But yeah, he's yeah.
Speaking of tech, what did you think of his comments with Oracle?
That goes back to what I'm saying. He's not telling us, you know, the letter and interview.
Didn't you think that was a little weird?
It was. He told us, you know, he got in the fourth quarter and got out, and he said, I didn't understand it. I got out.
So why did you get in?
How did you get in? But he never answered it. He said he didn't get it. Got out, but
it just seems very un-Buffett-like, where, I'm going to go invest in something. Oh, but now a few months later, I realize I don't understand it.
Yeah, he's very good at ending with a non-answer. You know,
unless, you know, just hypothetically, he buys Oracle, he thinks he understands the cloud and understands what's going on, and then he has some conversation with Bill Gates, and Bill's like, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And Buffett's like, didn't know about any of that. And he's like, maybe I don't understand. Who knows, right?
But, well, he was afraid of scoring another IBM, you know, just...
Sounded like it.
Like, he bought IBM. He actually made a little bit of money with it, I think. But his thesis, he admitted, I was wrong with IBM. But again, it's one of these things. He talks to all his managers. He talks, you know, what do you have? How do you run your system? Well, IBM. So he's like, well, I'm just buy IBM. But then, you know, things are changing really fast. And he admits that, it's not his strong point.
Well, I can tell you, I've spoke to people that work at IBM, and they have all reported their culture is kind of broken.
Yeah. I had a friend who actually changed job right at the end of December 2018. He worked there for 30 years.
Wow.
And then he went to work across the street. But, he worked there for 30 years, and, you know, not really good things to say, you know, just kind of down and it's best days are behind type of attitude. He changed job to 30 years. I mean, 30 years, that's a marriage. You know what I mean? That's you're changing. But the other thing, you know, I just wanted more details on his healthcare venture. Again, he answered with a non-answer, you know,
right.
JP Morgan, Jeff Bezos, didn't really get into the succession plan.
Well, actually, I think he did. So, did you notice during the interview where someone asked a question about why Ajit and Greg aren't up there? And he's like, well, they have a mic. But he's like, you know, at some point, they're going to have to be up there when we start, you know, reshuffling things. And by reshuffling things, you know, implying when him and Charlie die. Which then, seem to imply that those are the successors.
Well, they've been picked to run stuff, right? They're the two guys running.
Right.
I
just thought he gave away a little bit there, saying, hey, one day they will be up there. And if they're the ones up there, that probably means they're running the place.
Well, that wouldn't be a surprise, right? If
that, no, it's not a surprise, but it was a surprise he went that far to say that.
Yeah.
I think he might have just slipped it and said, yeah, those are my successors.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a situation where
I thought that was a big deal. I thought that was a huge deal he said that.
Yeah?
He literally just said, Greg and Ajit are going to be up there when we die. He literally said that.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Why was that not big news?
Well, they're the guys, right? Greg is running operations and Ajit is running insurance.
We've all kind of assumed that, but he's never actually said one day they will be up there.
They should be up there now.
I agree, but do you see what I'm saying? That he's never said one day they will be up there until yesterday?
Yeah.
And why wasn't that big news?
Yeah, well, what about Todd and Tom? Is that what they are? Ted.
Yeah, but they're just investing. They're not managing. They're not running operations.
What do you think about his Apple move?
I think that for managing smaller amounts of capital and having a limited capital base, it probably felt appropriate in one of their minds.
Yeah,
they found something better. Gotta remember they're playing as Buffett said, they're playing a different game, right? You know, Buffett's managing tons of money and gets new cash every quarter. Ted and Todd have a set capital base, so if they find something new, they have to sell something to buy something else. It's a different game.
Yeah, I think they each manage $13 billion.
$13 billion, yeah.
Yeah, and then they get to grow that. I think it's going to be the typical thing. The letter comes out, and then the Buffett haters, you know, they come out. And then every time they get a chance to quote him, they will.
I think we need a big event for something interesting, really interesting to be in the letter. Oh, the other thing, too, that I thought was interesting in the interview, and then I think we should wrap up, you know, it was a little – I will tell you, so when I did my podcast on Saturday, one of the things that I said that I thought was a little weird was that, you know, the market was down a lot in the fourth quarter, except the buyback activity was super light. And, you know, I just assumed that when we saw the marketable securities there wasn't a lot of buys in marketable securities. I just assumed that the buyback program was significant that quarter. And then when it comes out, they bought almost back nothing. That would really move the needle. I was kind of shocked, to be honest. I was like, okay, that doesn't really add up. It was. I did like that Buffett provided some clarity, saying that, you know, he thought he was going to be bagging another elephant and things kind of broke down. So that provided some clarity onto why he didn't take advantage of those lower prices in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that's it. But, and also this company, you had to be careful, not to look at quarter to quarter because they don't look at it either. But, yeah, I think he's getting impatient a little bit with what he's sitting on over $100 billion.
Well, they did say it might have been 3 years ago that if we're back here in 3 years and we haven't used that cash, that would not be acceptable.
That's right. That's right. Hey, we didn't talk about Kraft Heinz.
Oh, yeah. What about it?
I think, the stock took a massive beating, but I think there's an overreaction is from, not Kraft, but from the Berkshire side of things. You know, the whole day headline is, oh, Buffett made a mistake. Oh, Buffett took a $4 billion hit.
But he did make a mistake.
He did. But when you look at it from the big picture, the $4 billion loss is, you know, 0.5% of his assets or 1% of his book value.
Yeah.
So his stock portfolio swings $2 billion per day, up or down.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think he's going to be fine with Kraft. He said that he overpaid for was it Kraft Heinz? One of the two. He bought Heinz first, right?
He bought Heinz first.
And then they bought Kraft, and then he screwed up on Kraft. But,
I'm just curious. With your accent, is it hard to pronounce H's? I just noticed that.
Sometimes I forget it. That's what
happens. Is that a French thing or is that a Canadian, French Canadian thing?
No, it's a French thing because we don't pronounce the H in French. So we just skip it. Even like hospital in English, you pronounce the H, right?
Of course.
And in French, it's hôpital, but the H is there, but we skip it.
Got it.
So it depends on the word. I mean, I'm.
But you can say it, right? Like you can.
Yeah,
say
Heinz,
it.
Heinz, Heinz, and hot. Yeah, it's
well,
not.
Well, because you know how there's some dialects that have a hard time saying certain kinds of words.
Oh yeah. That's, oh yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I think it gets harder when a war has, you know, four syllables.
Yeah.
When the word is long, but no, most of the time, you know, I guess 80% of the time it's fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we should wrap it up, Brian. It was pleasure to have you on, and good chat, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Eric. Absolutely. You have yourself a good day.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
Here. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.